This is David Kaplan on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Cap and Company podcast, presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
Let me introduce myself.
Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
Follow us on the gram at Cap and Co. and ESPN _ Chicago.
Welcome in to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. You can watch the show on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago. I'm Chris Bleck along with Jesse Rogers, sitting in for David Kaplan today. The phone number is 312-332-3776. Okay, Jesse, Debbie Downer, that's who walked into the studio today.
Your head's
held low.
I watched the news.
SVP, there's all this stuff happening, and I don't know if we're actually going to have sports. Why are you doing this to me on a great week?
It's not my fault.
Fourth of July week.
Blame Scott Van Pelt, okay?
SVP.
He had on guests last night. He had Woj on. He played tape from Adam Silver. He had Reese Davis on, and they're all the discussion was all about this thing's going south. And we're going to have another guy on, Buster Olney, in an hour, who thinks there's a 0% chance baseball finishes its season and only a 5% chance we get to game one.
When I heard that over the weekend, this is Buster Olney on Dari and Mel.
How confident are you that this season gets finished?
0%. Absolutely 0% based on what I'm hearing.
How confident are you that this season gets started with actual games?
I would put that at 5%. I think that they're going to at least try in the next couple weeks, but I, especially in the face of these spiking numbers, it wouldn't surprise me if it derails quickly.
Buster, killing me here.
He is killing all of us. And here's the question. I think everyone's asking me when I've done a 1,000 radio shows over the last month.
Humble brag.
No, jeez. I'm just saying I've gotten this question a lot. What would it, as we've gotten closer, I've gotten this question a lot. What would it take for them to shut back down? And
right.
I was on Mina Kimes podcast today, and this gave the same answer. We'll know it when we see it. There is no, 50 cases, 50 players, it's shut down. We'll know it when we see it. But here's the question I think I'd love to ask Dr. Fauci or Commissioner Manfred, whoever's in charge of whatever, is can sports, baseball, NBA, but baseball in particular, because baseball's not in a bubble. It's going to be in cities and players are going to go home. Can baseball exist while chaos is happening around it? Right now, if there were games going on in Texas, Arizona, and Florida, just using those three, could it happen? Could it happen as hospitalizations are piling up? We know it couldn't in March. We weren't ready for it.
Right.
But obviously, spring training is going forward right now. Testing going on, by the way, as we speak, over at Wrigley Field. Guaranteed rate. We're going to talk to Steve Cishek, who was tested a couple days ago. So could baseball exist? Could the NBA exist with chaos happening around it? And chaos, to me, is cases rising and, more importantly, hospitalizations rising as well. That's my question to anybody in charge.
And to mix into the chaos, Jesse, it would be that there are parts of this country still saying don't wear masks. You know what I'm saying? So you could say there's rising cases, but we are doing something to change it. It seems as if we're getting to a point where there are some parts of the country, Florida, Texas, Arizona, where some people have just they've stopped trying to even avoid spreading this farther. So you're right. It seems like there's chaos going around. I would say, to answer your question, is I'm concerned about baseball because of this. I asked you this about 10 minutes ago. Why does baseball not have a schedule? I feel like if baseball had a schedule and you knew where these teams were going to travel and or you were limiting the amount of travel, because the question I followed up with you when you said, yeah, they don't have a schedule yet, I asked then, so if the Cubs and the Reds are going to play 10 games, are they going to play those 10 games all in a row? And you said, it doesn't sound like it.
Right.
It sounds like they're going to play the Reds for 5 games and then go play Pittsburgh for 5 games and then go play someone else for 5 games and then come back to Cincinnati or to Chicago. To me, if you want to do this in the safest way, wouldn't you have the two teams get together, play all the games that you need to between the two teams?
At one park?
No, I mean, you could travel those two teams back to whatever state. See what I'm saying? But like, the concern I would have is those states, the southern states and into the west, those states where the baseball teams are in those states, having other teams that are not in those hotspot areas bopping in and out of those areas. Because, like, if you look at some of the divisions, there are some divisions where a team who may be in a better off area at the moment then has to travel into Texas, right? Like, the Rangers play teams in the west, right? Mm-hmm. There are teams in the west that are okay right now, like in Seattle. The Mariners would have to travel into Texas, right, to play their games.
Yeah,
in their
California's
division.
Popping as well.
California's popping. So like, when you think about it, baseball doesn't seem to have a set plan at the moment, Jess. But where the NBA, I think, could actually get it done if they get the players to the destination and they get them all tested at the destination, and everything could move forward from that point. Like, to me, it seems like that plan makes sense.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt that the MLB plan is much tougher because of the travel. Now, I don't think, and not just the travel, going back to your own home and then going out to dinner.
Yeah.
And the NBA is going to be in somewhat of a bubble. So once they get in there, the hope is that they'll stay in there and they'll, you know, the infection. I mean, Adam Silver said it yesterday. If the infection gets inside the bubble, we've got problems.
Right.
If the virus, I should say, gets inside the bubble, we have problems. But going back to your point, though, I mean, it doesn't really matter if the Cubs play the Reds for five and then go to Pittsburgh, then go to Cincinnati. I mean, what's the difference? You're still doing the same amount of travel. But let me correct you anyway. The one thing I do know about the schedule is they are not doing five-game series. Now, that is the biggest question. Why go into a city more than once?
Yeah.
Why not get rid of your five games in Cincinnati all at once? And then at some point, the Reds come to Chicago. Five games, get that out of the way. I don't have an answer to that.
So you'll play teams three times in a season?
Potentially.
Two four-game sets and then a two-game series?
Something like that, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they might play them four times in a series. I don't know. I don't know. But they are not getting their 10 games out of the way by playing five at Wrigley and then five in Cincinnati, which is silly because that adds more travel. Maybe some of this will emerge later on. But MLB is up against it, and maybe that's why Buster put it at 0% because they are anything but in a bubble during this whole thing.
Right, and you know, we start, like, this is not a fun conversation to have, right? Like, as sports fans, we want to start talking about the games on the field. We want to start talking about strategy for NBA teams, who can win the championship. There are leagues around the world that have come back to play, and the Premier League, their season is in its second, heading into the third weekend of action.
Right.
Everything seems to be okay. They have it set up. Golf is back. There have been positive tests, but they figured out a way to remove those individuals, allowed the tour to continue on. There are ways to get this done. It just, I wonder, and the whole point to you watching TV last night and seeing the impending doom that's coming on the horizon is, like, did some of these leagues wait too long to try and get back? You know, what's really changed in the last month?
Well,
the only
virus
thing that's
has
changed,
spiked in
yeah,
these,
it,
in
it
these
spiked
states.
Big time.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So what do you think is going to change? Because the NBA doesn't start for almost 30 days.
Right.
You think things are going to get better in Florida?
Right. So if they'd gotten in their bubbles already, but who could have predicted what was going to happen? It looked like we were flattening things. We've done a good job in Illinois, maybe because people stayed at home and now are wearing face masks. So you'd hope to think that we've done the right thing here. But you never know. Maybe in a month, Illinois won't look so good. I mean, that's the thing. This thing's popping in different places that it wasn't before. And it may pop here again. Who knows? We just don't know.
Jesse, when the Cubs come back to play, bars are open in Wrigleyville. Did you see the photos from Wrigleyville over the course of the weekend?
Yeah, I did.
You know, like, and that's where you look back, and this is like a slow motion movie that we are living in a time that we have to remember that our actions that took place 2 to 3 weeks ago are what we're living in now. And thus, we have to wait to see if, like, because in Arizona, Texas, and all these states, they opened back up. And it was good a month ago. Now they're facing the problem. So it's like, here in Illinois, we're doing a great job. Like, let's make sure we do it in a respectful manner as we go forward so then we don't screw it up for ourselves going forward.
Well, that's the thing. One false step, meaning 2 weeks of craziness, no masks, do whatever you want, sets you back possibly months and kills people. I mean, we're not experts, but I think that's kind of obvious.
Yeah, I would think so. Jesse Rogers.
You're definitely not an expert.
No, I'm not an expert on anything. I'm just here hanging out with you. Jesse Rogers,
instead
Chris
Cap.
In for David Kaplan today. Let's go to Dave in Lincoln Park. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Dave?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call. I had a couple of questions. This all comes out of respect, but I'm just trying to understand. And Chris, I've heard you a couple of times, and I think your worries are warranted, but it just kind of comes across to me, at least, like you're treating the players like they're little kids. I mean, they have a choice whether or not to play or not, and the owners, have the choice whether or not to move forward with the season. And I agree that obviously there's concern and worry. But Chris, when it comes to sports, you always talk about data. So let me ask you this, and then I'll hang up and listen to your answers. What is your number one metric when it comes to talking about COVID-19? What is the metric that you look at to determine whether things are going good or bad? Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
I think my metric to go to would be testing. I think it's been shown if you follow metrics, because I do. I follow all these metrics. I look up the state of Illinois metrics every day, hospitalizations, the testing numbers. Like, if you want to look into why the state's been doing a good job, is because there are tests available for people to have. And if you compare it to other states, there are not as many tests available. And that's why it may be a bad look for a sports league to move into a state like Florida or Texas to play games when there's not as many tests available. And then you look at deaths, obviously. But, I mean, I'm not looking for the war of the coronavirus. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I don't quite understand. He hung up, but I don't quite understand the call, because, like, what are you trying to say? That baseball, like, all sports, all athletes should just go out there and the numbers don't really show anything? Like, I'm not Clay Travis, so I'm not going to tell you that this isn't a big deal. This is a big deal. This is a pandemic that we're living through.
Yeah, Cubs pitching coach Tommy Hotovy told the flagship that he had it, and he had it bad. He had it bad. We might get him on the show. So we all know people that have been affected by this. But let me just say one thing about the call. I don't know what he's trying to say either, because players want to play. Everybody wants to play.
Yeah.
It's just that if too many tests positive and it's spreading around, these are world-class athletes. You can't just let them play knowing they're positive. And if someone gets violently sick or ends up in the hospital, or worse, a manager or umpire, or worse, then you can't play. I mean, it's a sport. It's not life and death, and it could be life and death.
Right.
So that's what we're talking about. It's not like the players are being wimps. It's just that it may not be feasible if too many guys are testing positive, or some of the older guys are testing positive and end up in the hospital.
We'll take more of your calls at 312-332-3776.
I'll lighten things up when we come back.
Oh,
I did
good.
Something on the golf course yesterday I've never done. I want to hear somebody top it. I want to hear someone top it. And no, it was not a hole-in-one, unfortunately.
Jesse made par yesterday. We'll talk about it next.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Cap and Company.
Missed something? Podcasts are ready on the ESPN Chicago app.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
So what'd you do on the golf course yesterday?
I wish it was something positive. I'd love to come in here and say I eagled a hole, hole in one, a par three. None of the above.
Three putt?
None of the above.
I do that a lot.
That's not unusual. That's unusual.
Sucks.
No, I mean, it's... I
hate that.
It felt crazy in the moment. Maybe it won't sound as crazy, but it highlights how bad I am. And by the way, I've been playing with my son a little bit. And, you know, that moment where your son passes you, like in sports knowledge, which he did a while ago.
Oh, yeah.
And now in golf. Like, he's beat me the last three times. So, I think I was on the sixth hole. And, you know, I was a nine-hole course in Glenview. I'm on the sixth hole. And, you know, there's the fifth hole's next to you. The seventh hole's over here. So I managed on the sixth hole to hit the ball in a sand trap on the fifth hole. I jumped the creek to go hit it there. Back onto hopefully the sixth fairway or green. And I ended up hitting it on the seventh green. So I managed to play three different holes in one. That's the first time that's happened. I mean, we've all hit it in the other fairway.
Yeah.
But to hit it in the other sand trap, then hit it
onto another green. And at that point, you know, two different sets of people are playing these holes are like, what is this guy doing on our hole here? And my son is just laughing at me because he like parred the hole. And I took the snowman. So what is the most amount of holes you've played trying to play one?
When your ball is on another green,
yeah.
Like how do you play it off? Because you can't like take out the wedge.
You pick it up.
Yeah.
You pick it up in an embarrassing fashion. You pick it up.
Between the legs. And
my son's laughing. The group that's playing that hole is laughing. The people I was at the sand trap, the fifth hole are laughing. I'm jumping creeks.
Yeah, the old 3-for-1. You're getting your money's worth.
Absolutely.
I like that, Jess.
Awful. Has anybody played more than three holes trying to play one? You know what I'm getting at.
I would imagine that's pretty tough because how would you get a fourth hole to line with the hole that you're playing?
Oh, I probably could have yesterday. If I had played off that third
like if you hit it past green, onto the next hole?
Something.
Like the tee box?
I mean, obviously it depends how the holes are arranged.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like it
can be done. I got to three.
That's
pretty
good.
You could get to four.
I think that's pretty good. Let's go to Mike on the north side. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Mike?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. First off, I want to say, you know, after months and months of people saying this is dangerous, you got to stay inside, blah, 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 don't risk sports now. I mean, we could go the rest of the summer without it. Think about it. The farmers have a saying, don't eat your seed corn. Don't sacrifice the present for the future. Look at the White Sox. They got a nucleus of young guys that are signed for 4 or 5 years. You really want to blow that for one third of the season? Look at the Bears. Yeah. What happened to Foles and Trubisky go down? Who's going to replace them? You're bringing back Mike Glennon or Jonathan Quinn? It's not worth it. And as far as golf goes, 30-some years ago, we were playing at Billy Caldwell on the northwest side.
Yeah.
We were playing for $20 a hole. They put an old-timer with us. He said no. He saw us play the first hole, and he said, I'm in. The guy won 8 of the next 9 holes. The guy walked away with like 200-300 hours from us because we doubled the last couple of holes. I saw him a couple weeks later at Gale Street Inn. The guy wanted to buy me dinner.
That's
he was
awesome.
So happy. He was taking his whole family up. He gave me his phone number, and he says, you guys ever want to go golfing again, give me a call.
That's a great story. Thanks, Mike.
Well, look, the coronavirus is almost like sports. You're going to have a lot of different opinions about it. Let me tell you a quick story.
Mm-hmm.
This week, okay, Arizona, Phoenix is spiking, right?
Yeah.
For the first time, really, apparently, right? It wasn't really that bad early on. I talked to someone in baseball, and this is a good person. I'm not going to say who it was, what part
a
of baseball.
Good baseball man?
Yeah. And he, until 10 days ago, was in that category, not the hoax category, not that crazy category, but just like it. We can survive this. We can play. I can travel because he's going to have to travel until 10 days ago. In the last 10 days, I talked to him 4 days ago. He said, my tune has changed. I have a relative that works at respiratory, whatever it is, and the hospitals are filling up. I know someone that got sick. I mean, it's a weird thing. A lot of times you do have in this situation for whatever reason. The news isn't enough. You have to feel it a little bit. You have to know someone.
Yeah, you have to see it firsthand.
The Cubs are going to make Tommy Hotovy, the pitching coach, available to the media in an hour or so or sometime today. And we're going to hear firsthand from him. And this person in Arizona just needed to, even though we all know it's there.
Right.
And he knew it was there. He's not like a dumb guy, but he's like, I need to watch my I'm going to try to drive more instead. So it's just everyone's got a different opinion because you come from a different perspective, right? You just do. I think people in cities like Chicago, in New York, you saw it spike hard for a while, and you were worried. I was worried. I'm not 25 like you, Bleck. So
yeah, I wish.
And I worry about going in the press box a little bit. Those my colleagues. I mean, they're the least cleanly and sanitized people I know. So I worry.
Baseball writers of America.
And you know whether you think it's going to kill you or not. You know, Tommy Hotovy had it bad. Apparently, the Cubs pitching coach. So. I just think that it's easy to have one opinion, but you know what? You got to you got to look at this from 30,000 feet and sort of see a lot of different viewpoints.
I totally agree with you. I think the other item to add there is like the personal experience. Luckily, from what I know,
all of us at work here have not dealt with someone that we know who has had it or come in contact with, like, someone closely who may have had it type of thing. But if we did, I think you're right. I think it's a personal experience type of thing where if it's happening in a different state, in different part of the country, different county than yours, things kind of feel as if it's normal. You know, like, I continue to say this because I feel like people would take it more seriously if it was one of those zombie movies where if you knew someone was infected and they were, like, spewing out green slime walking down the street, we would all know, oh, that person has coronavirus.
Well, not only that, if everybody who was infected got sick, it would make a difference too. Right.
That would change it too, and it would give a visual cue to people to understand, like, right. Yeah, like, the problem is you may not know if you even had it or have it. You know what I'm saying? And who you come in contact with. And that's why shutting things down wasn't about just, let's just not do anything because who knows if this is real. It was so people don't come in contact with each other. That's the whole point, because you don't know who you could infect. John Rolling Meadows, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, John?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I was pretty much going to hit what your last caller said. So I'll go this way with my question. With experts and other people saying that this virus will probably reconvene in the fall when the temperatures get cooler, what's to say that, you know, maybe football will get pushed back a little bit and it won't start on time? My question is, if it really does pick up in the fall with the cooler weather, who's to say we're even going to play football?
Nobody knows. Nobody knows.
The commissioner might just say, you know, no, we can't. We got too much at stake to do this.
Yeah, I saw Reese Davis, who's the college guy for ESPN, on with Scott Van Pelt last night, and so many doubts for college because if a campus isn't open for students, you can't have the football players there. That's ridiculous. And college football needs its fans because they need the gate as well, although it is a big time TV sport also. There's a lot of question marks all over the place.
Thanks for the call, John. You know, the Orlando Sentinel today has an article talking about college football must seriously consider moving to the spring. And I know, so there's a full column on that. People suggesting in the South, like, how could you even play college football games with the numbers rising the way they are just based on the sheer numbers of the amount of people it takes to play a college football game?
I believe
you're looking at 100 plus on each side just to get to the game, and then you're also talking about broadcasters, officials, everyone else. Like, it seems like a pretty daunting task.
I think it's the Ivy League that is seriously thinking of moving it, right?
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, I know it's crazy. You gotta forget the traditions of the last 100 years of your entire life, baseball and football. I'll tell you, my son has played high school baseball until this year, obviously, and baseball, high school baseball in Chicago, in the Chicago area, is not fun.
No.
Because and football's a sport that can be played in any weather. Baseball is not. Like, I wouldn't mind a permanent change to the seasons. Football in the spring, baseball in the fall. September, October weather around here is 10 times better, 100 times better than April and May. 100 times better.
Yeah,
football in the spring would be perfect. Baseball in the fall would be great, at least at the high school level, maybe even at the college level. I think they should do it.
When would it end then? If you played high school baseball in the fall, when would you end the season? Start of November?
No, end of October.
End of October?
Yeah, you play mid-August. You know, they start up a little bit before school starts.
2.5 months
season. Yeah, that's great.
That would make sense.
I mean, what's the season now? March, April, and half of May, really.
Yeah, and it's about doesn't 2.5. Even get nice till maybe the last week of May.
If you I document the weather in spring because I've covered baseball for so long. And April and
is
May.
Is that one of your hobbies?
Yes. April and May is awful. It was during quarantine this year.
Yes, it was.
April and May sucks in this city, in this state, in this region. It sucks.
Yeah.
Baseball is a warm weather sport.
Jess, you're singing my favorite song because it's a lie that the spring is actually nice in the Chicagoland area because it doesn't get nice until like after June 1st. And then we start to see the weather start to turn, gets less rainy, start some temperatures in the mid-70s, creeping towards the 80s. But May and April now are just rain and like 55 degrees every single day.
We've had bad Junes. We've had bad Junes. This has been a great June.
This has been a great June.
But we've had bad Junes. So I'm all for the change for other reasons, you know. But look, I don't know what it would interfere with. I do know what it would interfere with. If you moved college football to the spring this year, it would interfere with a lot. But if it has to happen, it has to happen.
College athletics would never want that because then college football will take eyeballs away from March Madness.
Of course.
So they would never want to actually do that. But I think to actually play games, you may have to consider it. Or at the very least, move it to December, January, February. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't really use December college football. They have all the silly bowl games, but it's unnecessary. All right, Jesse, coming up next, you've been very down on today with sports, but I think there's something that we should celebrate. It's something that we reported on first here on ESPN 1000 yesterday. We will talk about it next.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
It's Cap and Company. Follow us on the gram at Cap and Co. and ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Chris Pluck, Jesse Rogers, singing in for David Kaplan today here on Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Were you listening to the show yesterday at about 11:35 Central Time? Did you hear?
That's time for my morning nap, so okay. I missed
it. Yeah, nap. You know, you did say earlier today that your son is a big Bleck and Abdallah fan, so I appreciate that. Shout out.
Well, let me clarify that.
As you put on the shades.
It's my stepson, so it's not my blood. So take that. You know, my own son wants nothing to do with you.
That's fair. If you were not around yesterday listening to the show, we were the first to report on radio in this city that today is Bobby Bonilla Day. How exciting of a day is that?
Nobody's tweeted about Bobby Bonilla Day.
Yesterday, first to report, ESPN 1000, the show of record, Cap and Company, the first to report that today would be Bobby Bonilla Day.
You might have
Happy
to explain
Bobby
it.
Bonilla Day.
Yay!
You don't know about Bobby Bonilla Day, do you?
You can call it coincidence. I call it perfection. Because we are here with baseball reporting to their facilities for spring training part two today because of a long, drawn-out fight over money. July 1st happens to be Bobby Bonilla Day, ladies and gentlemen. One of the greatest deferred contracts of all time. Today, Bobby Bonilla will get about $1.2 million.
Today is the day the Mets paid their oldest player. He is 53 years old, and he doesn't even suit up anymore.
Bobby Bonilla last played for the Mets in 1999. Okay? Last played for the Mets. His last played in baseball in 2001. He played for the Cardinals, but for the Mets, 99. And the Mets agreed for the remaining $5.9 million owed to Bobby Bonilla that they would pay it in annual payments later on. Because, get this, they wanted more cash because they were involved with a Bernie Madoff account.
Happy Bobby Bonilla Day!
Yay!
The Mets paid Bobby Bonilla more than $1 million today. Does that make any sense?
July 1st is National Bobby Bonilla Day.
$1,193,248, and don't forget the 20 cents.
Yay!
They have to write that check 25 times.
July 1st is Bobby Bonilla Day.
Yay!
You won't see any fireworks, and you won't be getting a day off from work. Only one man celebrates Bobby Bonilla Day. And that man is Roberto Martin Antonio Bonilla. Because July 1st is his $1.19 million annual payment.
Nobody really knew about it until it came due. All of a sudden, people had realized that me and Dennis had put this away 15, 20 years ago. So it was pretty funny that all of a sudden now it became this thing.
Happy Bobby Bonilla Day!
Yay!
And every time I look at Dennis, I say, hey.
Yay! Yay! Yay!
There you go, Jesse. Bobby Bonilla Day. First to report, Cap and Company, ESPN 1000, yesterday, and everyone in sports media, jumping on the bandwagon. I don't hear any credit, but it's
thank God that deferred contract isn't paid out twice a year.
I mean, geez.
You have to hear about that more than once is annoying.
I know it's
would be annoying.
Slow time in sports, but come on. you know that there are wacky radio shows around this country today that the lead story for them, and I listen,
I'm co-hosting one of them.
There's a lot of Golic and Wingo in there, and Golic and Wingo do a fine job here on ESPN 1000 each and every morning, 5 to 9 on ESPN 1000. But I knew that Bobby Bonilla Day would be leading the way.
Yeah, it is a perfect like morning zoo disc jockey thing.
Well,
you
right,
think you're having a good day? Yeah, right, how right. about Bobby Bonilla's July 1st?
We heard that in there.
Exactly.
And then you get the topic, well, if you got $1 million a year for 25 years, what would you do?
Right.
Well, I'd probably invest most of it. Right. I would probably buy a house.
I would do what anybody would do.
Pay off some debt.
Have some fun.
You know, maybe go on a vacation.
And as we say that, someone just tweets, fun fact for Bobby Bonilla Day. Jesus. My God. Bobby Bonilla doesn't even talk about Bobby Bonilla Day like the rest
of us. It's more of just a fact, not really a fun fact.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So just remember that. When you're watching, when you're listening the rest of the day and you hear it's Bobby Bonilla Day, just remember. Cap and Company. First to report.
Broke the story.
Just remember that. Listen, Jess. I know that you're breaking so many stories over there, but let Cap and Company have one for once.
You guys can have that one. You can absolutely have that one. By the way, I don't see one caller on the line that can beat my playing on three different holes.
The three-fer?
The three-fer. We're going to call it the three-fer. Find me someone that's done a four-fer.
Well, I mean, we're talking golf, though.
Yes, we're talking golf. Okay. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yes. You know, I don't recall ever doing that, but you know, it's always, you always feel this like level of, I get like, there's more pressure and I get anxious when I do hit it onto a separate fairway and the other guys are coming at me.
Right.
And I know that
double anxious.
Listen, I have to get over there and I just like, no practice swings either. Like, you know, that's the worst. It is if someone hits onto your fairway and then they plop in front of you and then they show up and you're like, all right, go ahead. And then they're out there and they're taking one practice swing,
right.
Two practice swings. They kind of look, they stand like they're some professional. It's like, you're on the wrong fairway. Just get it back to your side.
Normally I'm one of those guys that I'll throw a club and get really angry at myself. But I walked away after that hole and I'm like, okay, that's something you never see. That's something you don't see very often. Hitting into a sand trap on the fifth, the green on the seventh, yet I'm playing the sixth.
You're right.
So I found some serenity in that moment, just knowing that that's something you don't see.
Do you usually play well?
I usually play better than that.
Okay, it's abnormal.
But better than that.
Because, right, like, you can always chalk that up,
doing a three-fer is definitely abnormal.
Yes, at all times, including on the golf course.
But I was awful yesterday. I was awful.
But, like, how many times have you played this year?
Four.
Okay, and, like, when did you start playing? Did you start playing 2 weeks ago? Or
pretty
did
much,
you start playing
three,
in April?
Three weeks ago, yeah.
Okay, I mean, that's not... That's not
no,
too bad,
I know, but like, I know, but I should be better than
that. Isn't that the whole, the fun part about golf and then the frustrating part about golf is that, like, you can be good enough that you want to continue to play.
Of course.
But then you realize that playing once or twice a week, if you could play twice a week, if you're lucky enough to get out twice a week, that you're never actually going to get better. Right, like if
you do plateau.
We always, my friends, you know, we always say, and Abdallah is always there, and our other buddies who we play with, we always say, like, wouldn't it be cool to dedicate an entire summer where we golfed 5 days a week, and then to see the progress you could make after golfing each and every day? You know, like, I would imagine you would become so much better if you're able to dedicate the time. Like, that's the thing is you like. You get paired with a random person on the course, and they're really good. And then you're like, oh, how much you play? He's like, oh, I've played 47 times this summer. It's like, well, yeah, of course.
Oh, that I mean, that sport especially. I mean, you need reps. A few lessons would be nice.
Well,
If you played every day a full summer, you're going to be X time better, you know, X times better by September, right? I mean, you just know that.
Because I always, like, figure something out. And then by the next year, I forget what it is.
Right. I'm always better. I'm sure this is, I know this is kind of a thing people, I'm always better earlier in the summer than I am later. because I don't get into the bad habits. Yep. But if you played more, you'd get into the good habits.
I'm always better early in the round because I'm tighter. My back is tighter, the swing, everything's tighter. Once I get loose, I'm all over the
place.
Which
is opposite of what you would think of any,
right. You would think, right?
So, I don't know. But it was bad. I was awful yesterday. Culminated with a threefer.
That's pretty good, though.
Yeah.
I like, for the story, though, pretty good. I wanted to talk to you about this. Over the weekend, Cam Newton signs with the New England Patriots. I think that this is going to work out great for the Patriots because
everything works out great for the Patriots.
That's one thought to it. And second, if it doesn't go well, that means that Jared Stidham is probably going to play better than a Cam Newton at this level, which would be really good for them because now they have a young quarterback who's coming into his own. And then two, if they just need to release Cam Newton at some point, they didn't give up anything for the future for him. So, like, I feel like this is a perfect situation for Cam Newton. And if he's healthy, I think he's going to be successful in that offense. They find a way to use any quarterback to get some success level out of them. So, like, to me, I think this is a perfect fit. You relate that back to the Chicago Bears. Did the Bears miss an opportunity here by just going out and trading for Nick Foles early on in the offseason?
Well, look, I'm not smart enough to know the answer to that question, but I am smart enough to know that if Bill Belichick makes a move that you didn't, you need to start looking in the mirror and reassessing. And I have no idea if Newton's going to work out, but if he does, wow. Any team could have had him, including the Bears, who need the quarterback as much as anybody, who needed a quarterback as much as anybody. So it'll be, I mean, just that's the end of Ryan Pace to me. If Foles Trubisky doesn't work and Newton does, that's another major decision, let alone Bridgewater and all these other guys.
Oh, yeah.
That's another major decision you flubbed on. So if Bill Belichick decides it's the right thing, you better start thinking about it. That's the only answer I have for it.
We'll talk some Bears football with you next at 312-332-3776. What did Bill Barnwell from ESPN think of the Cam Newton to the Patriots deal? And should the Bears have gone after Cam?
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
To Chicago's home for sports.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
This hour of Cap and Company is brought to you by CBDMD. Discover the secret to everyday wellness. CBDMD, superior CBD, superior you. Get 20% off when you enter the code WADDLE. That's a good code, WADDLE. Chris Bleck, Jesse Rogers, sing in for David Kaplan here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. We're talking about Cam Newton. We're talking about the Chicago Bears, the Bears offseason. Bill Barnwell on the ESPN Daily podcast earlier today talked about Cam Newton and the Chicago Bears. Should the Bears have signed Cam instead of trading for Nick Foles?
I do think that the decision to trade for Nick Foles, a player who realistically has, if not a worse injury history than Cam Newton, certainly a comparable injury history when it comes to his checkered past, I do think that the Bears would have been in much better shape to not trade a draft pick and to sign Cam Newton for much less money than they're going to give Nick Foles over the next 3 years.
So that's Bill Barnwell on the ESPN Daily podcast, Jesse. So I think what we're going to see, we had Charles McDonald from the New York Daily News on yesterday's show, and he suggested the same thing, and he thinks Cam Newton's going to work out fantastically for the Patriots. So I think what we're going to get here is the national media is going to look at what the Bears did for the quarterback position, and they're going to suggest that Ryan Pace missed, especially if Cam plays well. I think
people, I just did that before the last break.
You absolutely did. Yeah. But you know what the take will be locally, though. We're going to continue to hear that Nick Foles has a relationship with the coaching staff.
Oh, jeez.
And that's why you, in this weird COVID-19 offseason, the familiarity of a quarterback and his staff is the reason you go and you trade a player to then get Nick Foles. So, like, it's like, what do you worry about
more? If Cam Newton has success in New England, that blows a hole right in that theory. What's his relationship with that staff and that system?
I totally agree with you. And I would also throw in there, who says that Cam Newton can't learn a new offense?
Well, through Zoom only.
Well, I mean,
I'm with you. I'm with you.
that kind of logic would suggest that he's not a bright guy. I think he's a bright guy.
Well,
I think
he has to learn a new offense with New England. So, I mean, whatever team he was going to go to, but I guess the response to that would be you have a choice between a guy that does know the offense and one that has to learn. And they took the guy that already does know it. So I get that. But, again, if Cam proves that he can learn a new offense in New England, like hundreds of other quarterbacks have done over their careers, moving on to new teams, and Foles fails, then it wasn't worth it. Who cares if you know the offense if you can't play?
Did Philip Rivers know the offense that the Colts are going to run? No, Philip Rivers has been in one spot his entire career. But he's now going to be the starting quarterback for the Colts, and they have high expectations. You see it all the time. You're right, Jess. And, you know, you would also look at it as, like, both players, if they're healthy, who's the better player? Nick Foles or Cam Newton?
Oh, I mean, it's not even close.
It's a slam dunk.
It's not even close. But he hasn't been healthy in a while, and he hasn't really been a winning quarterback in a while now.
Well,
he hasn't played in a while now, so maybe he is healthy. I mean, you go back and forth on this. Is he the same quarterback? Will he be the same quarterback he was? If he's healthy, he might be. But if there's lingering injuries, he may never be a starter again. Who knows?
I think it's a bit of a misnomer that he hasn't played well, because in 2018, he had 24 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, a completion percentage of 67.9. So, like, it's not like he was awful. Yes, he hasn't been that MVP caliber player that we saw when he threw for 35 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. But he's been either at league average or a little bit better than league average, because he also gives you some of the running game as well. I don't know if Nick Foles is really going to do that. So, like, the question then for the Bears is, like, how good does Nick Foles have to be, not only to beat out Trubisky, but then to actually put away stories like this, where,
well,
like, Bears fans are going to be...
If he's good, I think it's not fair to simply compare him to Cam. I mean, Cam is in the best organization in sports.
This
possibly
is what we're going to do, though. We're going to compare it to Teddy Bridgewater. We're going to compare it to Cam Newton. We're going to compare it to whenever Jameis Winston gets a starting gig
again.
But
I'm saying if he's good, we'll do less comparing.
Sure.
If he's good, then he's
absolutely
good. And no one will care what the other guys are doing unless Cam's going to be the MVP or something. Here's my question for fans. 312-332-3776. Would that simple idea anger you? If Cam Newton is really good in New England, is that just going to anger you to no end that a guy like that with a talent like that ends up with a good organization and having success when he was right there for the taking? Teddy Bridgewater, we can say he hasn't really been a long-term starter. But Cam Newton is a talent, and all he needed was to get healthy. And if Belichick and the Patriots figured out that he is healthy and he's their guy and Ryan Pace could have done it, how angry will that make you, considering the Foles Trubisky thing and the uncertainty with either of those guys?
For me, it would go back to this logic where Ryan Pace and the Bears organization, they zero in on a specific guy and they just refuse to look at other options. Because I feel like if that takes place, if Cam comes out and he's really good.
I'm sure they would push back on that notion, but I mean, I get where you're coming from.
Look at the track record.
But no GM or coach wants to think that they have tunnel vision. They don't want to believe that.
Right, but this specific GM has shown us in 2017 specifically that he did have tunnel vision when he was scouting quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Okay, so then we play forward, and then we get to another point where it's like, okay, this guy knows the offense. Yeah, the head coach just wants it. Like, did they even do the work to figure out if Cam was healthy? Because I would understand if they did do that work and they were like, you know what, he's not going to hold up, it doesn't check out, the medicals are not where we want them to be, I'd say, okay, that's fine. But if Cam Newton's healthy, I think Bears fans will be upset. I think they will, especially if the team struggles offensively. You know, that's where it kind of all comes back into play, because for them to get out of this 500 spot that they're in the NFC North, Jess, they have to improve offensively. They can't be at the bottom of the offensive rankings. They have to get at least to middle of the pack. And it would be nice with an offensive-minded head coach who's the play caller if they could be, like, top 10, if they could actually be putting points on the board more than the 17 19 points per game.
I question Matt Nagy's ability to utilize Cam Newton, because what's great about Cam is he brings that extra safety in the box because he's a real running threat. What has Matt Nagy proven last year? He has no idea how to call a run game. So you can like have a really unique run scheme with Cam Newton, but we have not seen any of that from Nagy.
This Nagy criticism, man, it reminds me of Trestman. Different way. Just meaning good first year, very, very critical of his second year. Now, Trestman didn't even get a third, right? So right. At least he has one good, one bad. What's the tiebreaker going to be in year three? Because if we are saying you're worried about a talented quarterback coming in and the coach not being able to utilize him right, then man, we got bigger problems than just picking the right quarterback.
I think it was,
picking the right coach might be the next question.
I think it was earlier this week. Maybe it was on Monday when Cap was here. And then the calls all turned into anti-Matt Nagy calls. And I was like, well, I was unaware that like we were like out on Nagy already. I thought he was a good offensive mind who could figure it out.
He did some mea culpas though after the season on this radio station.
I'm with you.
And here's the thing. It's great. But if every year you are doing mea culpas, eventually you're not going to get that chance. But at least he recognizes some of the mistakes, and we'll see if the changes take hold.
We talked to Buster Olney from ESPN. We talk baseball with Buster coming up in 2 minutes.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.